Welcome to the Bailiwick Express podcast. This is The Interview, one in a series of podcasts where we at the Bailiwick Express speak to members of our community about events, personal stories, politics, current events or charitable initiatives. Thank you for joining us. In this edition of The Interview, I speak to the President of Education, Sport and Culture, Deputy Andrea Dudley-Owen, and the Director of Education, Nick Hines, following the publication of the second Education Strategy Annual Report. ESC continues to use the report as a benchmarking tool for the education strategy, a wide-ranging strategy that guides ESC's work as it attempts to bring island education into the 21st century. I asked Deputy Dudley-Owen what she made of the report this year.
Well, this is obviously the second strategy report, and what it is showing is that the action that we've been undertaking for the past few years is now starting to show some positive results. We understand that there is still work to do. There will always be work to do. However, the drive to improve education locally, the drive to stabilise education locally, and the strategic approach that we've taken is starting to show those green shoots of recovery.
You say green shoots of recovery. Of course, the report shows a lot of positive movement. Is it as fast as you would like?
I think it's important to note that speed doesn't always assist in embedding deep systemic change, and that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming to build some really firm foundations. It's clear that education has to change to meet the 21st century requirements. That was my vision of delivery when I stood as the president, and that if you're going to change education, which in large part hasn't changed too discernibly since it was pioneered in a sort of Victorian fashion, I suppose, in desks and classrooms, that actually what we'd be seeking to do is some cultural change, and that can't happen quickly. You have to take people along on a journey in a measured way if they are going to truly believe the change that they're involved in is going to be meaningful and they want to be part of it. So the change and the improvement, I think, is happening at a pace that I'm content with. If it was happening any quicker, I think that it would not be as credible or deep as it needs to be okay. For the benefit of the island.
And so the report, now that we have it, how will it be used?
Well, it's used as a barometer to measure how we're doing. It's used to communicate that to the community at large for transparency, for their interest, to act as a point of reference so that we can build up a repository of information from this term, being a marked change from how education has been delivered in previous terms, where we've introduced a form of governance that hasn't been seen before in Guernsey, where Nick has been lead as our Director of Education, has been leading cultural change within the local education environment. And the Education Strategy Report allows us to start to build up a picture of that change, and over time we'll be able to see patterns emerging from that. And I think that it's incredibly useful data that we're collecting, but for the sake of the really good priority of transparency and communicating to the community what we are actually doing in education and how well we're doing and where we see improvements that are still needed.
And it's also an opportunity for staff to celebrate about what we're doing and what we're doing well, because we absolutely accept that it's an accountability measure, and you know, why wouldn't a government department with a budget of over £70 million report externally about how they're doing and what they're doing, and recognising where there's been successes and where there's been areas of development. But I think it's easy to knock back where things aren't quite so good, and that's fine, because we've got a plan in place to improve where they're not, but but we really want to take the opportunity for staff to really reflect and celebrate what they've done, which is having a really positive impact on all the children, young people and adult learners that we've got across our whole mandate. And I don't think very often Guernsey takes an opportunity or takes a chance to actually look at the good things that are happening. I think Guernsey can be very critical of itself, and sometimes I think we need to say there are things we need to do, but there's also lots of good things already happening that we can celebrate, build on, and actually become a beacon when we're working with other jurisdictions about how things can be done. And I think we need not to forget that. We can be critical, but we also need to look at the good stuff that's happening as well.
And so you talk about the green shoots, and we're on this pathway to developing all these different facets of education. I'm assuming there'll be a third report, a third annual report. I mean, what particular areas of development would you hope to see the most progress in a third report? So if we're moving forward now.
I mean, I can start if you like. I mean, I think certainly we've identified within report where we know we're doing well that need to be maintained. We can't slip back on areas we're already doing well to the detriment of focusing on other things, which is why the strategy is so important, because it makes sure we prioritise all of the things that need to be maintained and all of the things that need to be improved. So we've highlighted that literacy, which was one of our focuses over the last couple of years, is now doing really well, and certainly when we benchmark against England across some age groups, we're outperforming England with regards to the levels of literacy of our children and young people. But we know that maths isn't quite there yet. Maths isn't at the same level as literacy, so we'd hope to see maths improve in next year's report, and we've highlighted that in this report. We're halfway through a really substantial programme to improve maths across the island. We'd also hope to be continuing to look at the improved attendance of children and young people at schools back to pre-COVID levels. We've improved attendance on last year, but they're still not where we want them to be. They still need to be better. You know, you can't improve outcomes for children and people unless they're attending. And attendance is really interesting, which is why it's good that this is a public report. Schools and settings cannot be held they can be held responsible, but it's difficult for them to impact on poor attendance without working in partnership with parents and carers, without working in partnership with health and social care, without working in partnership with other agencies, where children who might not be attending are multifaceted for a range of reasons and have been engaged with lots of different agencies. So this is about saying attendance is something we're working on, and we need the support from the community to have an impact on it. So we've got maths, we've got attendance. We want to focus on improving the mental health and well-being of not just our children and young people, but improving mental health and well-being of all of our staff. We know that when you have staff who are content in their workplace, who recognise the vision, values of what that workplace holds, their mental health and well-being improves. And we want to continue to focus on making sure that we're meeting their needs within the workplace, as well as improving their mental health and well-being, which also has an impact on recruitment and retention. So there's a variety of different things which we need to focus on across all of the different areas, but certainly they're three of the main ones for us.
Increasing attendance in state schools continues to be a challenge that ESC needs to overcome. The pre-COVID attendance target is 95%, and while attendance in all settings has risen, it still hasn't met ESC's target.
It's a really complicated picture, and it's a picture which other jurisdictions are struggling with coming to terms with and how they can improve attendance. Our attendance within primary schools has recovered far quicker than our attendance in secondary schools. Now, primary schools still aren't quite at the level pre-COVID, but they're not far off. Secondary school attendance has taken longer to return, and it's still not where we want it to be, but it has improved. Now, we're grappling with some of the same issues that other jurisdictions are having about mental health and well-being due to COVID, or mental health and well-being and non-attendance because they didn't always attend in the same way during COVID, and some of that becomes a habit about what you do and how you do it.
Yeah.
Attendance has been impacted by some people being ultra careful and not going to school or attending school where previously they might have done because of fears around in the pandemic and infection and what that had an impact on the psyche. But we also need to tackle and work with parents about the importance of attendance. And if your child isn't attending, it does diminish their opportunities to be more successful with their final outcomes. And so it's something that we're working on and trying to pick apart through looking at other plans and documents from elsewhere to try and move that forward. But it's something we're not working in isolation on. It's something that all countries' jurisdictions, so there's lots of research out there that we're trying to implement and work on.
I think it's important also to note that there is a view of, it's easy to get the kids into school and that it's just a case of telling them to go and they should go and it's all the fault of the parents, etc. But there's so much complexity behind this as a particular subject area, and there's a multitude of different reasons why a child might not be attending or why a parent might not be able to so-called pull rank and have the authority to be able to insist that the child goes to school. It's very difficult if you have a teenager who is not wanting to engage with school to physically make them go. Now, most parents would not want to, or carers would not want to get into that physical side of forcibly removing their young person from their room and taking them to school. And it will be very, very stressful for the parents involved with that, their work commitments versus their commitment to their child, etc., etc. So you start to go down into areas which are very complicated to understand, and the multi-agency approach to this is the right one, but it takes time. The taxpayer support for this can be significant as well. So it is a community effort to raise the expectation and to assist with the resilience levels of our young people as well, and to reduce anxiety about going into the school place. But as I say, it's a complex matter that we're having to deal with, and we're not alone in that.
So there'll be future work streams on this. Is this to be interact with the community about?
Well, there's certainly been an increase in support for our schools with family liaison officers, and they are having a very significant impact. Their ability to be able to understand the unique complexities of every single situation and engage with the family to encourage them to support their young person back into school has been significant, and we've been seeing that. One area that we haven't spoken about is the interim governing boards that this committee has uniquely set up for each of our education settings. In total, there's been 200 hours worth of governance to support our schools, and within the context of those governing board meetings, we hear about the challenges that this schools having, the senior leaders are having with attendance, and the individual, obviously anonymised, case studies that we learn about the complexities with these. It's not a simple case of kids bunking off, playing truant or being awkward. Often there's far more behind it, which there obviously often is with social issues.
Supporting the mental health of staff and students continues to be an area of development for education, and the work to provide a framework of help has been informed by several mental health surveys.
I think it's a really good example of how we've been listening to our workforce and how we've been listening to staff, and how the strategy has been wrapping around their feedback to us. When we first put the strategy together, it was talking about mental health and wellbeing of students and learners. We did our first survey 2 years ago with all of our staff, and one of the things they told us at that point was about how their mental health and wellbeing had suffered as a result of COVID, and that we needed to be thinking as an organisation how we could improve that mental health and wellbeing of all of our staff alongside our children and people. So we changed that priority, or that commitment within that priority, about improving mental health and wellbeing of all. And as a result of that work, we're developing a mental health and wellbeing strategy for all of our children and our staff. We're working closely with public health to make sure that our policy and strategy ties in with the overall strategy for mental health with the states of Guernsey, because it's all interlinked, and it's interlinked with, I think people get fed up with me saying it, but you know, the culture of an organisation and people recognising the same vision, the same values, brings those people together to have that focus on what they need to do collectively. When there's that collective focus, and when people feel that they're talking the same language as colleagues next to them and around them, even if they're not in the same room, then mental health and well-being and your satisfaction and happiness within the workplace rises. It causes less absence from work for people who are in the workplace. It causes less need to look at recruitment. It retains staff, and so we need to invest in our workforce to make sure that, I know Deputy Leon has spoken before about the continued professional development courses we run. We ran 300 last year for our staff, and this is about identifying future pathways for them. It's about investing in them. It's about listening to what we need to do to improve the day-to-day. We're looking at terms and conditions for teachers to see whether the terms and conditions that are in place at the moment can be improved to ensure that their work-life balance is better and any pressures or stresses that they're feeling within the workplace are improved. So it's not just about putting a yoga class on. It's actually about making sure that if you want to improve something as big as mental health and well-being, what processes, what procedures can you put in place to embed a different type of culture rather than just giving free fruit, or rather than just saying there's a free yoga class. Mm. People are responsible for their own mental health and well-being. What we have to do as an organisation is try and facilitate them to be positive about what they can do themselves, but also to put that scaffolding in place to support them as much as we can to make the environment they work the best it can be.
I've got just three more topics I just wanted to touch on before I tie it up. Specifically on, I was interested to know the on-island teacher training programme, and how, I was wondering if you could speak on that and how that's going.
Mm. Well, that's, I think that's one of our significant successes. We have had a teacher training on island previously, but this has been reviewed and refreshed, and the impact of that in terms of supporting sustainability of recruitment pipeline is really, really strong, and it's an investment in our local workforce as well, in our islanders, and the attraction of that for people who are career changing at a later stage, or for young people coming back to the island to know that they actually can do degree level qualifications in Guernsey, I think is really compelling. So we know that there has been a shortage of teachers worldwide. It's been a global issue. Obviously that speaks to a number of things. We've obviously had the impact of COVID, but it's also demographics as well, about how many qualified teachers there are versus how many younger people need teaching. And we're at that difficult stage at the moment in that pattern, but what we do need to know, what we do know, is that investment in our islanders is something that islanders want to see. They don't want us to be importing staff wholesale from the UK. There's benefits to that in terms of different practice and expertise, but there's also disbenefits in terms of knowledge of the island, really being able to intrinsically and innately understand some of the challenges that some of our local students have compared to, say, in the UK, where they may be different. So there's swings and roundabouts, and we need to understand that actually it is right to have a pipeline of local applicants coming through our teacher training. We have had graduates. I went to the ceremony at the end of last year, and sadly they weren't there in person because they were working.
Yeah.
and they were there amongst the health and social care nursing graduates, but this year we've had a good uptake in our ITT numbers, and
I think we got between 9 and 12.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're aiming to have a good amount of graduates every year to fill a reasonable amount of vacancies. Obviously cognizant of the fact that we can't do it all, but because there is obviously a churn through the organisation every year, and some skills we all need to find off-island.
One of the biggest takeaways from this report is the uptick in literacy and the continued difficulty in raising mathematics results to an appropriate level. I asked what the barriers are to developing numeracy and how so-called community hubs are helping the community build a strong base level of literacy and numeracy.
So with regards to mathematics, we knew them from some of the results and outcomes that we'd had in the previous couple of years that it needed to be an area of focus. So we commissioned an external evaluation of mathematics and a review of mathematics in every single school and setting. So all schools and settings have now got a separate mathematics plan, which they've worked on alongside officers. We've also introduced a new mathematics curriculum, which is really picking apart and ensuring that the sequencing and delivery of maths is what we want it to be to secure those good positive outcomes. We're halfway through that programme, and we're starting to see some green shoots around the early years. We saw a 7% rise in their mathematical ability last year, and certainly some of the early standardised testing scores that we're looking at, we anticipate seeing a rise in mathematics at the end of this year, but then really starting to embed next year. And it's the same process that we went through with literacy. If you look at the literacy results and English results, the English at the end of Key Stage 4, so the GCSE results, were above England when we benchmarked with England, and likewise our literacy scores in all of our year groups are significantly above England when you benchmark. Maths isn't quite there yet, and we hold our hands up about that, and that's why the report is really transparent, because we're saying we're doing really well here and we're not going to let our eye off the ball. We're going to maintain literacy and continually improving, but we're also developing maths, and we need time to embed and sustain that if we want it to have a lasting impact. And in the same way as we're doing that within our school-aged children and learners, there is a deficit in our community around adult literacy and adult numeracy, and some of that is a legacy of children and young people being able to leave age 15 only 15 or 20 years ago without taking any exams, and we recognise that within the community. So the College of Further Education through the Guernsey Institute are delivering adult literacy sessions in different places around the community, recognising that very often people don't want to come into a school or come into the college to access that. So they've been delivering sessions within cafes. They have been delivering it in some primary schools when parents are dropping off their own children. And we want to look at that programme of developing adult literacy and numeracy over the next 3 years, and are now writing a new plan with the Guernsey Institute on how we can continue to upskill our adult community, especially in a time when, you know, times are changing. We don't always expect people to be in the same workplace for 10, 20 years as they might have done. And certainly those people are now coming back to us and saying, I never got an English qualification, I never got a maths qualification, but I need to now get another job. And so they need those qualifications where they might not have needed them when they left school at 15, went straight into a job. That job might not exist anymore or might have changed, and the expectations of that employer might have also changed. All of our apprentices, for example, all do English and maths as part of their apprenticeship, whether they like it or not.
Okay.
And they have to pass English and maths as part of their apprenticeship, or they don't get their apprenticeship. And it's really important. These are core fundamental skills that everybody needs, irrespective of whatever workplace you're going into. So we're really focused on that within the school context, within the TGI, and developing it into the adult community.
And I think that our sort of community attitude towards the school leaving age, that actually it was unique in the UK, amongst the UK, so British Isles, so to speak, and that it was okay, it was the Guernsey way, and people, there was such high levels of employment, and there has been for so many years, that it hasn't affected people's employment opportunities or chances. So whilst they may not have got such a high value job, well, initially, they could actually end up making some really good money and not having had a good qualifications base. And it's not about the qualifications, it's about the level of skill that they've got to be able to speak their own native language. It's about the level of skill that they've got to be able to undertake, you know, functional maths in an everyday circumstance. And certainly in my time on the committee, I have, you know, I'm I'm reasonably academic myself in terms of having gone all the way through university and had a focus on language and things like that. But actually, I really understand this for other people now, that the barrier to everyday life, if you cannot read properly, you cannot read the ingredients on the back of a packet of food. So how do you know what additives are in there, for argument's sake? How can you support your child with their reading if your reading is no higher age than a primary school child? And that's no over-exaggeration for some of our members of our community. They've managed to hide it, they've managed to get away with it, they've managed to make shortcuts to be able to live life, but actually their level of satisfaction, their ability to reach their potential is significantly curtailed without those two key skills of being able to read and write properly and communicate well with, you know, varied vocabulary, but also to be able to use numeracy in an everyday way. So it's really important for me in government to be able to make sure that all of our people are reaching their potential because they've got the base level of expected skills to be able to read, to be able to write, to be able to add, take away. And previously they may have been let down.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I think that the education strategy, the approach that we've taken politically, certainly from my personal point of view, is I can't work without a clear route map of where I'm going and how I'm going to achieve what I want to. As I said, the vision that I wanted to achieve was an education system fit for the 21st century, so that those coming out of the education system have got the skills and the knowledge to be able to add value to the community. The strategy has been a way of pulling all the various important stakeholders together to give that common purpose, and it's owned in large part by our staff community because they're the ones who translate that strategy into action, which is rolled out in practice every single day for the benefit of our students. And to understand from our cultural value survey that they're now seeing that in everything that they're doing is really, really strong and very powerful, that the change that I've been leading on has been worthwhile. We are seeing the impact of that change. It is positive. It is at a measured pace, but for my part, I'm convinced and confident that it has a depth to it and is embedded now within the Guernsey education system, and that we can continue to build on that.
Thank you.
I don't think it's the same. I mean, my favourite quotes just to finish on was Muhammad Ali said, your hands can't hit what your eyes can't see. So actually, unless you're looking really carefully at what you're going to be doing, how can you possibly have an impact on what you know you should be doing? And this is the thing. So I think this really systemic and systematic approach about where are we, therefore what do we need to do and how are we going to do it, is exactly the way we ensure we're using and making best value of taxpayers' money, which is diminishing within and resources. So we need to make sure we're hitting our priorities exactly where we need to hit them and hitting to make an impact.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
You've been listening to a Bailiwick Express podcast. If you like what you heard, please share, like and subscribe so we at Bailiwick can continue to pull apart the stories that affect you, the listener. Thank you for joining us.